Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and I'm here with Kay Potok, also your host for today.
Thank you for joining us and listening in. It's good to have you with us. Later on in the show, Susan Gwiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer, will be checking in for a monthly update from the City of Ames with some information on what will be happening here during the month of March. And we have a very special guest we're excited about introducing here on Local Talk. We'll do that in a minute. But first, Ursula, let's start with a look at the weather. Will you do the honors?
It is warming up, kind of. Days are getting warmer and nights are still cold and below freezing, so don't put any plants out yet. The low for tonight is still predicted to be around 30 degrees, not that warm. Saturday should be sunny with a high in the low 40s, but at night it should get down to around 20 degrees. Sunday will be sunny as well with a high near 55, and Monday should get above 60 during the day. Rain is coming, though. This is what my grandmother called transition rain weather. It may rain during the day, and on Monday night, there is a chance of thunderstorms. Tuesday may also see thunderstorms, but we'll stay up around 60, and by Wednesday and Thursday, we should have sun again with temperatures remaining above 50.
Thank you, Ursula. And now, as a member of the KHOI board, I'm very pleased to introduce our special guest, Local Talk. As a KHOI listener, you may already know of Hollis Monroe, who's been a known radio personality in Ames for many years, and who also hosts two shows on KHOI, Jazz Works on Monday and Saturday, and the Tuesday installment of Morning Masterpieces, but is here with us today in a new capacity. We're pleased to announce that Hollis has joined the KHOI staff team as an associate station manager. Welcome to the team, Hollis, and welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hollis, could you please tell us a little about your background in radio broadcast?
Well, I started in radio straight into college, as a matter of fact. I started out at a college station, and amusingly enough, it was an album rock station, which was progressive rock, which today you can hear on the Oldies Network, which is a bit depressing. I stayed in radio during college. In fact, I was at the station when it switched over to an NPR station. It was originally a college station. Then I went on the road for many years doing opera and Shakespeare. And then the woman who was to be my wife said, you know that last gig you did, the 16-week road show up and down the West Coast? If we're going to do the whole marriage and family thing, you need to be around a bit more than that. And I ran into Kurt Snook, and, well, the rest is history. I wound up spending the next 17 years with WOI and then into IPR.
And what do you see for KHOI's future?
KHOI is such a wonderful... I mean, what you've done here is Herculean. I mean, it ranks up there with the 12 labors, in my opinion. And I really foresee it becoming an even greater community resource for information, for music, for discussion. It's truly a treasure, and it's very, very valued by the members of the community. We need to expand our outreach. And basically, I hate to do it unquantifiable, but provide even greater service to the communities here in central Iowa that we serve. That is the goal. In my humble opinion, this is what community radio is all about. It's quite exciting to be in at the ground floor, and it's not the ground floor. As I said, you've been here for 3 years. It's such a wonderful opportunity to help create something that is so wonderful and vital to the community that I live in. And to provide the service to our neighbors, our friends, for everyone in this area. We are a resource as much as a community theater, as a public library. We are something that enhances and enriches the lives of the people in our community. And this is a wonderful endeavor to be part of. I really appreciate you inviting me in. Thank you so much.
Thank you for stopping by, Hollis, and come back to Local Talk soon.
Oh, I will. Thank you.
My bark of life was tumbling down, troubled stream of time. When first I saw your smiling face, was in its prime. I'll never forget where'er I roam, ever you might be. If ever I have had a friend, that friend in me.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today with Kay Puttock, and we are both very happy to be here with you. Kay, you produce a Local Talk segment called Community Service Appreciation. This month, you're covering One Heart Equestrian Therapy. Your interview with them is a bit longer than usual because, as you told me, there are a lot of good stories to tell.
Yes, and it was a much longer interview than we've got time for this morning, the whole thing. And there were lots of wonderful stories. I spoke to Chris Lager, who's the co-founder and executive director of One Heart Equestrian Therapy. As you can tell from the title there, the idea is that the heart of the client and the heart of the horse become one in this therapy. I hardly knew anything about this kind of therapy before the interview with Chris, and I found it absolutely fascinating to learn about it. Equestrian therapy uses horses to provide physical and psychological therapy to people with various physical, cognitive, and emotional disabilities, often multiple disabilities. And we'll hear some very moving stories about people whose lives are transformed by this therapy. One Heart Equestrian Therapy recently received a grant from Storey County Community Foundation, and there's quite a story about the project for which the grant was awarded, so we'll hear about that too. My guest is Chris Lager, the co-founder and executive director of One Heart Equestrian Therapy. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Kay. Very exciting to be here.
You've just won an award from the Storey County Community Foundation, and we'll want to be hearing about that. But first of all, why don't you tell us what horse therapy is all about?
This is therapy for people with disabilities using horses as a mechanism to work with their bodies, work with their minds, and work with their spirits.
So you have people with sometimes multiple disabilities, but usually they've got physical and cognitive disabilities, I believe.
Yes, if we can safely mount a rider and achieve individualized goals, we will make every attempt to do that. We have worked with a snapshot from the year 2015 was 50 riders presenting with 30 different diagnoses. And these are generally people who come with multiple diagnoses.
And how many horses do you have?
Right now, our herd is 10 full-sized horses, and we have 3 miniature horses. But we have a variety of therapeutic services, and it's not all riding. We actually have 4 different classes designed around riding. Then we offer therapeutic driving. One Heart is one of about 60 centers in North America that is certified to offer therapeutic driving, and that's more holding reins and driving a carriage rather than a car or
and,
automobile, of course.
You do have pictures of those on your website, little light carriages.
We use miniature horses for the driving, but we also have some lovely Norwegian Fjord horses that originally were sponsored by the Sons of Norway in Story City. So we could develop this disability driving program. We have 2 carts that are adapted so wheelchairs can fit right in them.
And is the driving for people that maybe can't sit on horseback, or does it have other goals, or what's the difference in that respect?
We can achieve a lot of the same types of goals that we set for a rider, only in a carriage. Our people are invited to enroll in the therapeutic driving if their weight would exceed the load limit that we set for our horses' health, if they were afraid of heights, if they had a physical condition that made it contraindicated for them to ride. Some of the therapeutic benefits that we see that are the same are certainly hand-eye coordination. There's a lot of communication skill needed when you are driving a horse because you can't feel their body and they cannot feel your body to receive the same signals a rider would send to the horse.
So the communication would be via the reins or with their voice or both?
There are 3 recognized aids. That would be the reins, which attaches to the horse's head, and the driver holds, the voice, and a whip. Mm-hmm. With each of our clients, there is an able-bodied assistant in the carriage at the same time to assist. They are the ones carrying the whip. It is used very delicately and is used as a hand, not a punishment or an enforcement, but a guide.
Whip is perhaps not very, it's more to just touch the horse with.
Yeah. Touch or even to brush along their side, or if it comes to the middle of the back, it means something differently. Mm-hmm. If it's behind, more towards the tail, it means something different. So, it means a lot of different things to a driving horse.
Right.
And so in the skilled hands, that's where the whip is held. Our drivers, our clients, are working very much on the tonal quality of their voice. They are working on enunciation of a word, and they're working on strength and vocalization. It's very dynamic when the horse, who is intelligent enough, learns to recognize our client's voice. And so with whatever tone, whatever syllables they use, and whatever sound, as soon as that horse pairs the word whoa in their speaking style, they will respond.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rewarding for that driver.
To have the horse, as it were, obeying them and listening to them and the animal doing as they say.
That's correct. And it's a learning process for the person because that shows cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do some sequential thinking. So if we have them walk towards an object and they're given the instruction then to have their horse stop, they have to recall that the proper word is whoa and not stop, that it has to be verbal. It can't be a hand signal. There's a lot of dimensions to this.
Right, right. Well, you've explained some of this already as you were talking just now, but that was going to be my next question. How does this work? How is this therapeutic? And let's start this time with to be on the horse's back.
Let's definitely go to riding because most people visualize equestrian therapy as a rider on a horse. And we have indeed put riders from age 2 to age 90 safely on the back of a horse. Each of our riders have individual therapeutic goals because they are assessed by a physical therapist prior to coming to us. We do have 4 different levels and types of riding classes that we assign, but it really is the essential of starting with the warmth of the horse's body. The horse is so large that it will send heat into the rider's muscles and joints. So a lot of our riders are not even on saddles. We try to keep them in close contact with the horse. So we have a variety of different pads that we can put on the horse's back so we can offer different placement for the body of the rider. Some of our riders are not learning to ride. We are merely using the horse's strength, their muscles, their dimensions, their dynamics, their gait, and their strength and their warmth to provide a therapeutic atmosphere. The class that works exclusively with a physical therapist in the arena is what would be known classically as hippotherapy.
So, meaning the Greek word for horse.
Hippo is the Greek root for the word horse. Yeah. So it is actually a horse used in therapy at its essence.
Mm-hmm.
And the physical therapist will use different placements of the person's body on the horse. For example, if you come to our arena, you can see people sitting backward, facing backwards.
Yes, I read
from,
that.
From the normal riding style, sideways. They can be on their hands and knees. They could be standing.
On their hands and knees on the back of the horse.
Moving.
That sounds almost like a circus act.
There is a very advanced form of this, and it is called vaulting. We are not credentialed to do vaulting. We can use elements of that, and that is what comes to mind when you think of a circus rider. We have actually the tack, which is the horse apparatus that is used for vaulters that we can use in our arena. A person may or may not progress through our riding phases, our different styles of riding. If we do assign a person to a different style of class, we have a class called developmental therapy. This is for people who are more physically capable but may have some cognition issues. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of manipulatives. We will place a cookie sheet across the rump of the horse, and they can work puzzles on that. We use the horse's rump as a table.
So they're sitting backwards on the horse.
Sitting backwards.
And doing a puzzle.
A puzzle on the ring.
And the horse is just standing still.
No, they're walking. They're moving. Movement is everything. And each horse offers a little bit unique style to their gait, which we assess before assigning a rider. However, a horse's gait more closely mimics a human's gait in the rotational and lateral motions and the length of stride than any kind of mechanical or other therapeutic device that they've come up in a clinical setting. The other way we see this therapeutic modality working is that you get people out of a clinical setting. They're in a natural setting. They're surrounded by peers. They're surrounded by other volunteers. Their parents are cheering them on. And it is not people in white coats stressing that you have to reach 1 inch further. You have to lift your leg 5 times more. We all stand around and have a great time and let the horses do this. There's a very high level of motivation for people to participate in this therapy.
So I'm just trying to get a picture of this. Is someone sitting on the back of a horse doing like a jigsaw puzzle maybe? Or I think your website mentioned working with clay perhaps. And I've got some of the idea of why this is much better than just sitting in a room on a table, at a table doing it. You're outside, there's people cheering you on. It's something of a feat, I suppose.
A horse is very, very large. And one example I have is a child that was undergoing chemotherapy for leukemia. He was 5 years old. When he first came to evaluations, we had to literally peel him away from his mother. He was shy. He was frightened. But when he met his horse, by week two, he was leading the exercises, both verbally and by demonstration. We had elevated him. He was sitting above all the big people.
Right.
We had created for him an environment where he was in control. Mm-hmm. He led the exercises. He bossed the horse around. He knew what his outcome would be. He knew how to get from point A to point B, and it was completed. So in his 45-minute riding session, he controlled the world, and it changed his outlook on life within 2 rides.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of minutes that we see transformation, particularly in attitude. Of course, for physical therapy, it is much more prolonged, but it is apparent. A classical image that I can say is somebody who lives in a wheelchair and their muscles are very tightly contracted.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stretch their arms out. They can't extend their hands or their fingers. And their legs seem to come with their knees to a jockey position, even when they're in the chair. There's very little relaxation. We can see within 1 to 2 laps of our arena the dramatic effect of just the rhythmic movement of the horse and the enjoyment and interaction with the volunteers, that a person who will start with their knees on top of the horse's neck, now their feet will be down along each side of the horse, but their knees are high like a jockey. In 2 laps, their feet will then drop enough to reach to the stirrups. That's pretty dramatic to watch.
Yes.
We actually have riders from 9 counties. We are the only PATH International Center in central Iowa.
Well, these are very, very moving stories, and there's obviously a lot going on here that maybe human beings can't even fully understand.
We have what I have termed cutting-edge moms. These moms will go to the ends of the earth to find what ever will help their child. They're knowledgeable, they're educated, they're tremendous advocates, and they find us.
Mm-hmm.
We learned a lot from them. We learn a lot from their children.
Well, you have recently received a grant from Story County Community Foundation, so that's you're in the news for that reason. Would you like to talk about that grant?
Certainly. We didn't even apply for it. We were sponsoring a young man who was working on an Eagle Scout project. He had to design, organize, manage, find the funding to do everything for his project. He had come to us asking if we might have a project, and we suggested to him that what our riders could use was a sensory trail. This was used in a lot of facilities for people who have distinct aversion to tactile input, or they have very much difficulty with sensory processing. This is a way that their horse can be led up to a station with different sensory items. So this young man, Spencer Dodgen of Story City, wrote a grant to the Story County Community Foundation, and then he found matching funds to go with that. It was a tremendous project. He exhibited a lot of skill in organization. He had proposed budgets for this. He researched the design. He came to the farm so he could get exact measurements on the height of a person mounted on a horse so that he would be able to have his suspended items get
work. We should maybe tell our listeners, the suspended items are these foam noodles that are used in swimming pools and aqua aerobics, brightly colored foam noodles. And just to put it simply, the horse walks through these, with the rider, through these hanging noodles, which are all these different colors bouncing off their bodies as they go through.
That's just one of his 10 stations.
Well, this certainly sounds like this is a lot of fun, which brings me to the next point. You have a volunteer training coming up. So if people like the sound of what they've been hearing and they're interested in being a volunteer, would you like to tell them about your training?
You bet. One Heart is an all-volunteer organization, essentially. We do pay our therapists and our instructors, but all the other roles are filled by volunteers. All of our riders generally have someone leading their horse. Then to accompany each rider, we have sidewalkers. And these people don't hold the rider on because, of course, our riders are working on their balance and their strength. But they serve as facilitators for the instructor. So many of our riders don't know up from down or right from left or in from out. Then the sidewalker can remind them, they can indicate either by emotion or verbally, or they can really go hand on hand to complete that action. Those are all volunteer positions, leaders and sidewalkers. We have jillions of other activities that go on. We actually start volunteers at age 12.
So you're looking for volunteers from the age of 12 on up.
12 on up.
And the training is on April 7th.
April the 7th, we'll have our first training of the year. It's on a Thursday evening, and it will be from 6 to 8 p.m. There's no need to pre-register, and there's no need to have horse experience. We ask of our volunteers to commit to a two-hour-a-week shift.
Okay. They can find all the details on Facebook, or they can call you by looking at your website. But the date is April the 7th from 6 till 8, and this is One Heart Equestrian Therapy.
My bark of life was tumbling down, troubled stream of time. When first I saw your smiling face, was in its prime. I'll never forget. Misfortune nursed me as her child, loved me fondly too. I would have had a broken heart had it not been for you. I'll never forget where'er I roam, smile to think that in all that while you're a friend to me. I'll never forget wherever I roam, wherever you might be.
That was You've Been a Friend to Me by Tom Richards and Al Harris. Before that, we heard an interview with Chris Lager of One Heart Equestrian Therapy in Colo, Iowa. They recently received a grant from Story County Community Foundation.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Joining us now also is Susan Guiasta, the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, who comes in once a month. Thank you, Susan.
It's great to be here.
We're going to talk about Ames civic life.
Yeah, a lot is going on.
Okay. Let's start at the top.
Well, recently this week, we held some public input meetings for the Lincoln Way Corridor Plan. And that is a city council initiative to study Lincoln Way from east to west. And if you think about Lincoln Way, it's one of the few streets in Ames that cuts entirely through the community.
That's right.
Starts out to the east by the Resource Recovery Plant. It's somewhat industrial and moves through the community and exits at the west. So we are getting input. This is really important for the community to be involved. This plan will go on. We'll be working on this plan throughout the year.
And so the idea of a plan implies that there are changes possible to the
absolutely.
Street. What kind of changes?
Well, they'll be looking at things like the land use around Lincoln Way and a couple of blocks off of Lincoln Way. Is it the highest and best use of the land? Would there be other uses for the land? And then they'll be looking at things like transportation. Is this corridor a good place for all modes of transportation? And then also the urban design and character. And I just want to be clear that there are actually two Lincoln Way studies going on, and I think there's a lot of confusion. The Lincoln Way Corridor Plan is a planning plan. It's looking at the entire Lincoln Way Corridor. There's also a Lincoln Way study, safety study, that's being done that is looking at the safety of Lincoln Way through the campus town area. And that is the result of the growth of the university. Intensification of residential living across from campus to the south in the campus town area. And then, obviously, we have had some tragic events in campus town where we had a young woman killed. And we want to look at safety. Do students feel safe in the area? What can we do to improve it? The Lincoln Way Safety Study is a different study from the Lincoln Way Corridor Plan. So I just want to make sure those are clear.
And the Lincoln Way Safety Study is coming from the university or from the
city?
It
is a joint project, jointly funded from the university and the city, and working with a consultant to gather data mm-hmm. about how Lincoln Way is currently being used by all modes of transportation, to sort of capture that data during events like a basketball game, what happens to the traffic during those situations, high traffic areas, and then to look at it through the course of a day. How does traffic flow through that area? Where are the bottlenecks? Where are the trouble spots? And then come up with solutions. So
there might actually be some changes to that part of Lincoln Way that would make it safer.
Right. Well, I think you have to analyze the data, get the data, find out what's happening there, and are there fixes that you can do to make that safer.
So are we going to have a skywalk?
Well, I think that you look at everything and then you eliminate the ones that, for whatever reason, aren't
viable.
Right, aren't viable. But again, that is a traffic study, a safety plan, separate from the corridor plan. The corridor plan looks at the entire stretch of Lincoln mm-hmm. Way. And I just realized that there is a lot of confusion about those two plans. Mm-hmm. And I completely understand why there would be.
You said something about the first plan.
Mm-hmm. Before. The corridor plan.
You said that there was a look at the land use around it.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Because it seems like most of the land along Lincoln Way in Ames is already owned
absolutely.
By private property. So how does that work?
It just is an idea of identifying areas that might be prime for redevelopment. I mean, obviously, it's if the property owners are interested in that.
Uh-huh.
It isn't it doesn't mean anything more than that. It's just identifying areas where we think, oh, well, this might be a commercial node. This might be a good place. For a different use than what's currently being used. And there are there are underutilized pieces of land along Lincoln Way. And as you know, there is a large project going on in West Ames along Lincoln Way that has taken a while to sort of get going. Mm-hmm. But you'll start to see some commercial buildings with residential above them probably mm-hmm. pretty soon starting to be built. So you see that constant turnover of property. And in area where there used to be mobile homes, we're seeing development. People think of property as sort of stagnant, but it is always changing. And is it at the highest, best use? You want to look at that and think, what's happening with this building? Is that the right use for it? Should there be homes here? Should there be something else?
And is the city actually able to step in and influence the sale of the land and the use of it?
Well, when the city doesn't really usually take an active role mm-hmm. in development, as in we have tools to spur development, but we don't step in as the developer. So we look at the council looks at areas and looks at incentives. They look at their toolkit and what can they do to make property that is maybe not being maintained properly, not being used the way that it probably could have. What tools or incentives do they have to entice somebody to come in and look at that property as a potential redevelopment opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So how soon do you think we'll actually see the results of this?
So the plan for the Lincoln Way Corridor plan is to bring it back to council at the end of the year, and this with recommendations, with ideas, and then the council will have to decide what they want to do with it at that point. But this is not the public input sessions on March were just one of the many steps. And if you miss those public input sessions, we have a link to the website that's shows information about the plan and is interactive. On our website at cityofames.org, at the bottom of the page in the spotlight, you can link to the Lincoln Way Corridor plan, and you can put in your comments. There's a map. It's that you could click on it and talk about different parts of the corridor and leave your comments. And those pieces of information are all helpful as we move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And we'll put that link on our website, too.
That would be great. Yeah. That would be really helpful. Another topic the city's been interested in, we were approached by AMIS, which is an acronym, Amid Iowa Organizing Strategy. AMIS has been following what they see as a housing issue in Ames, a lack of housing options for people in Ames. And I have to say they're probably not the only person that has or only group that has noticed that there is a bit of a housing crunch going on right now. Amos approached the Ames City Council about the idea of sponsoring a conference looking at housing issues. The city said, okay, we're in. The university said, yep, we agree that housing is an issue that we should look at at sort of a big picture level. And Story County also said, yes, we believe that housing is an issue that affects not only Ames but out in the county as well. So it's both an urban and a rural issue. So the City of Ames, Iowa State University, and Story County are sponsoring an Ames conference regarding housing issues. It's called A Place to Call Home. And it is options for housing stability in Ames and Story County. That is on March 23rd. It's coming up, and registration for this conference is now available through the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. You can go to that website, and I also hope you'll help me publicize that website.
Yes. Uh-huh.
At http://register.extension.iastate.edu/Ames. That is kind of a mouthful.
Okay, we'll put that on the website.
The conference on Wednesday, March 23rd, will be held from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. It will have a speakers, panelists, even a little performance, some ISU student exhibits. It will really focus on housing has a lot of ripple issues, employment, transportation, housing affordability. All those are interconnected, so we see this as being a great interest to social service agencies, nonprofit, public officials, developers, real estate agents, educators, just really anybody that has an interest in housing, making it more affordable? What does – and even the term affordable is up for debate. What's affordable to you or to me may be different to somebody else. So discussing those issues, this is the first step. This is a huge issue. It has lots of layers. So this is getting people together to discuss those issues and get those conversations started.
Is there a keynote speaker or some?
There's actually a couple of keynotes, so it isn't focused around one speaker. It really is bringing in local organizers, local municipalities, other counties that have done things kind of innovative. Amos is particularly interested in the concept of a housing trust, which is a way to bring the housing costs down to allow it to be affordable for people. So they have speakers lined up who represent different housing trusts in the state, and I think that will be a very popular part of the day.
And where will it be?
It will be at the Scheman Center. It's very affordable for a conference. As you get multiple participants from the same agency, the cost really drops down. It includes lunch and snacks and discussion and lots of expertise. So I hope that a lot of people are able to make it to that and join that conversation because it's very important. And like I said, it's just the first step, and I think it's a conversation that people want to have and are looking. We're promoting this as a solutions-based or solutions-centered conference. It isn't just to discuss the problem. It's really to look at how can we fix it. And again, the first step.
Sounds like some action points will or action plans will come out of
it. We absolutely hope so, and I think that's at the end of the day, we hope to come away with, okay, now where do we go from here?
It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is great. Some other things coming up. I know I talked about this last time, but it's such a popular event. We have our annual Eco Fair slated for Saturday, April 2nd. As I came down here this morning, I saw that our banner was up across Main Street. It's always fun to see. To me, the Eco Fair is all about spring, warmer weather, getting out, enjoying that, and doing some things to your home that make it more energy efficient. This is the time that people think about gardening, and the city, through its Smart Watersheds program, does a lot of sponsoring of things like rain barrels. Rain barrels are awesome. I have two of them at my house now, and I've been able to water my garden from my rain barrels the entire summer last year. Now it was a rather mild and wet summer. So,
may I interject a question here?
Absolutely.
What do you do with your rain barrel in the winter? Is there no danger of it bursting?
Well, I did have one burst. So if you don't empty it enough, it will it does freeze. So when it comes probably October-ish, you need to drain that water from the rain barrel. And I put mine now in the garage. I learned that if you do leave them out, you may not have it next year. So, and we do a rebate for rain barrels. We do a $50 rebate. If you purchase a rain barrel, we encourage people to purchase them in Ames. But if they purchase them somewhere else, they can submit their receipt to us. One rain barrel rebate per household. So people like me that have two, well, I only got the rebate on the first one.
You know, I had a visitor from Colorado recently, and when she saw our – we have rain barrels too, and I water my garden with it. I love it. And she saw the rain barrel, and she said, "Do you know that in Colorado it's against the law for us to collect rainwater?"
Wow.
She was so amazed that we were actually encouraged to collect rainwater.
Yeah, so it all has to go back to the watershed, I guess.
Well, I know that we are very fortunate in Iowa not to have the water problems of other states and to have high-quality water in Ames, which is actually another thing. With the emphasis on water quality in Flint, Michigan, again, I just want to emphasize that in Ames we have had no such problems with our water. Even around the Ames area, there have been some concerns about the quality of water, and Ames has a long history of high-quality water, which is pulled from aquifers deep underground. We don't use river water or surface water as other places do. And our water chemistry is very stable. We have not changed, I guess, what you would call the formula for our water in years. As most people know, we are building a new water plant that will go east of the current water plant by probably about a mile away. The formula will not change for the water. The water will taste exactly the same. We know it's great tasting water, but again, people should be very confident that their water is safe to drink. We test it regularly. We are in the midst right now of preparing our consumer confidence report, which is a document required by all municipal water systems in the state of Iowa. And the previous year's consumer confidence report are on our website. You can look at the levels of any detectable element that might be in the water. There's never been anything that's caused any concern. I think people should feel very comfortable drinking water in Ames. It's safe, it's delicious, and we're quite proud of it.
Mm-hmm. So. That's very nice. What is the projected date of the completion of the new water plant?
It is 2017, and mm-hmm.
It's right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably about a year from now. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited. We'll definitely recognize that event with a lot of fanfare. I sort of got off topic there. Just a minute. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Eco Fair. I got so excited by rain barrels and water.
Well, that was my fault, stopping that.
Well, not only is water conservation part of the Eco Fair, it's also about electric conservation. It's about being good citizens. We try to recognize people who go to the Eco Fair by alternate transportation. If you've biked or walked or taken the bus, we have drawings, and we put you in a special drawing where you're more likely – it's usually a smaller pool. You're more likely to win a prize. But again, the annual Ames Eco Fair is 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 2nd at the Community Center Gym. That's right by City Hall 515. It's actually part of City Hall 515, Clark mm-hmm. Avenue. We'll have vendors, activities, and displays. This year, we were approached by a citizen who said, could I help by putting out some electric cars on display? And he's got quite an assortment. Electric cars have really come a long way. Sometimes you don't realize you're mm-hmm. driving next to an electric car because it looks so much like a traditional car or a sedan. I think he might have some different kinds of electric cars for us to view. So that's something new and something completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. We were really excited by that option. But we will have the traditional booths and vendors. We'll be sharing our stories about why the watershed's important, why conserving water is important, what you can do to conserve electricity, home energy audits. That's something free for Ames Electric Services customers. And I think that spring is a really nice time to think about having a home energy audit if you've never had one before. I have had one. It takes about 2 hours. It's extremely informative. They go with you and walk your house and look at your windows and your doors and insulation. And they went to places in my house I've never seen before. So, and then they give you a report and they say, here's the high priorities. Here are things that are the quick fixes. And then they even check back with you.
So these guys have a booth at the Eco Fair?
We sign people up. We sign people up. In fact, you could actually go on our website and sign up today through cityofames.org/smartenergy. You can go to the residential energy audit, and there's a fillable form right on our website. Fill it in and say that you're interested in a home energy audit, and we will arrange for somebody to contact you and get that all scheduled. I think spring is a nice time. We have a lot of interest in the fall as people are a little bit more concerned about their energy bills. But spring is a great time because some of those fixes are a lot easier in the spring to actually accomplish. And that's sort of the role is that the whole goal of the energy audit is that in the end you save energy and you actually see a reduced utility bill. So the quicker it is that you can implement those changes, the better off we all mm-hmm. are.
Yeah. So reasons for going to the Eco Fair is to see the cool electric cars.
The cars, all the vendors.
And the vendors are for green products?
Anybody that has a connection to, energy efficient products. We see people that do appliances. We see people that specialize in seeds, heirloom seeds. It's just a huge variety of building product, of water rain barrels. We have nonprofits. We usually get the ISU solar team that shows off their solar car. It's just really a variety. And some years we have the same vendors that come back, and some years we have brand new people that come in. We get more and more interest from ISU environmental groups. that have either a particular message. We've had groups from Ames High come in, and one year they were doing a campaign against plastic bags, and that was very popular. And they had a I don't know what they called him, but a mascot that was the bag person. I don't, he was covered in bags. And
that means it was a real person under
the bags. It was a person covered in bags. And it really was, I think, powerful to show. And, you know, this is the time of year when you drive around and you see those bags around. And I hope that I always carry a reusable bag in my purse. And we also give those out at the Eco Fair. Those bags you can take with you to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So maybe it doesn't hold all your groceries, but maybe you have a few less plastic bags by using those reusable bags. Mm-hmm. We try to have products available at the Eco Fair that we give to people that help them become more environmentally friendly in their just day-to-day life.
Yeah, and it's much nicer to use a cloth bag or something because it doesn't hurt your hands if it's loaded. And certainly the bags I have hold a lot more than those plastic
bags.
Well,
and those plastic bags, I've had them rip on me, and I just find them very frustrating. So we will have those grocery totes again this year, and that alone should get people to the Eco Fair.
Okay, cool.
Let's see. So much to talk about. We have actually kind of in connection with the Eco Fair, this is the first year we've ever done a photography contest to celebrate our local waterways. There are a lot of amateur photographers in Ames, and we encourage them to submit to us photos of the waterways. These photographs must be images in Ames that feature a water component, and that is actually pretty liberal. It's a lake, river, wetland, it's stormwater runoff, it's precipitation or a related conservation practice. And if you think about rain gardens and rain barrels, I think it's fairly broad, but we need those to be submitted in print and digital form by Tuesday, March 15th. So that deadline is coming up, and then we'll be displaying those at the Eco Fair. Those will also be forwarded on to the Iowa Water Conference photo contest. So there are several categories: natural, which is landscapes and plants, flowers and weather; recreational, which is people, parks, pets; wildlife, you know, which is birds and wildlife; and then conservation, which is about stormwater management. And we really have been trying to focus on this idea, this concept of a watershed, and getting people to understand how when you wash your car in the driveway or pour things into the gutters, that product, whatever you've put in there, all the grease and grime from your car eventually makes its way into a storm sewer intake. And people don't understand that is not filtered. That goes directly into our local streams and waterways. I think people have this perception that anything that goes into the sewer somehow goes and is treated, and it's not. It goes – if you put something in a storm sewer here downtown, it may be I don't know if it's hours or days. It'll end up in the Skunk River. That's just how it goes. There is no process in between.
Yeah, there are some labels on some of the they look like – I call them drains.
They dump no waste, drains to the river. I think that that's a concept that is only recently starting to take hold, and people really get it. As a kid, I remember people dumping pop cans and, you know, your takeout garbage. Just put it in the sewer. That's like a garbage can.
Mm-hmm. And, turpentine or,
absolutely. Motor oil.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there was the knowledge base that isn't treated, that it goes directly into Ada Hayden. It goes directly into our local streams and rivers, and that's not good for the environment. And so this this photography contest is really to bring awareness that these are all interconnected, and we have to be really careful about how what we do and how the consequences of our actions.
So. Now, what happens to these photographs?
So the photographs will be on display. The winners will be on display at the Eco Fair so people can see them. And then we will go ahead and enter those into the 2017 Iowa Water Conference Photo Contest. So we're excited to see what we might get. There are some wonderful photographers in Ames. I've seen several that focus in Ada Hayden and several that focus in parks. And I just know we could have some really great submissions for this. I hope people take the time to submit it. That again, that focus, the image has to include that water component. So
you'll give us a link to
yes.
where people can find instructions?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that's cityofames.org/smartwatersheds.
Okay.
And that's where you can get information. It has the contest rules, and then it has how to submit your images. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward. We've never done it before. We're going to see how this goes, and maybe it'll become part of our annual event.
Okay. So we have time for one more item.
Well, I guess I just want to remind people, if you're a property owner in the Campustown area, today is the day to submit your grant for the Campustown Facade Improvement Program. I think we're in beautiful downtown Ames right now, and you can see the results of the facade improvements down here in in Main Street. Campustown has started a similar program, came to the city council. The city council agreed to fund a facade program based on the Main Street program with some modifications. Main Street is historic and charming because of its and the facades have shown that by improving them back to the historic way that they looked before. The Campustown facade improvement is a little bit different in that it recognizes that the facades may be funky or unique, not necessarily historic, but they do need some of them need some maintenance. And so we did a pilot project last year where the West Street Deli and Jeff's Pizza were redone. And if you're on campus, one of those Jeff's Pizza's along Lincoln Way, and the West Street Deli is along West Street. It looks completely different, not necessarily historic, but has a completely new look and feel, a different kind of unique vibe. And so a pilot project was very successful. This year we're going to go ahead with a competitive grant situation where we expect several buildings to be submitted as applicants for this Campustown Facade Program. And just a reminder, today is the day to get those in.
Okay. All right. And the grants are submitted to the City of Ames?
Yep, absolutely. You can get those on our website at cityofames.org/planning. So the grant is on there. It's not particularly – it's not super difficult, but does take a little thought, and mm-hmm. you'll need to get that in. There are other opportunities on our website. We encourage people, if they ever have questions, we have news. We have a calendar on there. To look at our website, cityofames.org. It's a great search engine if you mm-hmm. can't find what you're looking for, and do a little search. And, of course, anybody who ever has questions can call my office, the Public Information Office, at 515-239-5204.
Okay. One more time, the phone number?
515-239-5204. That's public information. I can find the answers to your questions.
Okay. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Kay Puttock, and we were just speaking with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Early in the show today, we shared an interview with you from Chris Lager of One Heart Equestrian Therapy. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris.
And today we also heard another song from them called You've Been a Friend of Mine, which is also from the same CD. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. And if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878. If you enjoyed the show, just tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows at that website as well. That's khoifm.org, and we'll be putting on a lot of links today from the City of Ames. You can find today's show on the homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron.
Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. KHOI is moving on up. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.